This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined, as always, on Thursdays by Matt Newmans, shedding a tear as this is the final preview episode of the 2025-2026 season. Hard to believe, Matt, we were out in Honolulu, week zero, getting ready for Hawaii and Stanford, and now the season wraps up. But don't worry, before we know it, we'll have week zero action. And big news today, I'm sure you want to break it down extensively. Memphis will be playing UNLV in week zero of 2026.
Well, it's been a good season, a good handicapping season. And you're right, time flies. Not that long ago, we were in Hawaii kicking this thing off. And let's, you know, we started this with a winner. Hopefully, we'll finish it with a winner, too, on Monday night.
That would be nice. Yeah, it's, you think back, and I was looking through some of the odds, and there are a couple really good sites that kind of keep track of all the numbers over the season. Sports Odd History uses BetMGM's futures numbers, and Indiana 100-1 all throughout the preseason, even into the season, and now they sit as 8.5-point favorites to win the title. Miami, as we discussed on this podcast, was as long as 200-1 championship week, and now they're playing in their home field to play for the national title. National championship just a little before 8 p.m. Eastern Monday night, down at Hard Rock Stadium, the site of this title game. It'll be on 57 different channels of ESPN. It will also be live bet by the two of us. We'll be on VSiN Primetime Monday night, previewing the game and then talking about the game extensively throughout it, Matt. So many different ways to look at it, but the look ahead line was 5.5 prior to this game, prior to the semifinals. And now here we are, mostly 8.5s across there. I do know that South Point, for those in the Nevada state, can bet South Point. That's at 9, but we'll call it 8.5 right now. When we look at this number, just pure number, is this number gone too far, in your opinion?
First of all, I'm going to say this is a true Cinderella story, following up what you cited there about sports odds. 100-1 shot is now an 8.5-point favorite to win the college football championship. Crazy. I mean, think about that. It is crazy. Ranks right up there with a former greenskeeper winning the Masters at Augusta, right? Cinderella story. You know, I think you were too. I was on Indiana over 8.5 wins this season, Tim, but I did not bet Indiana to win the championship because I thought, you know, that's fantasy. I finally bet the Hoosiers to win the championship, I think sometime in October at 10-1. So I've got that going for me, which is nice. We'll see how that works out Monday night. Yeah, I think the number's gone a little bit too far. I think the right number in this game is probably 6, maybe 6.5, just based off Indiana's blowout of Oregon. You knew the number's going to get a bit inflated. But 8.5 or 9, I think, you know, up there a little bit too much. And, you know, we'll break down the matchup and why this number is probably a little bit too high. But, you know, you're seeing 9 out there. I don't think it's going to get to 9.5 or 10. I believe this number probably closes right around 7.5 to 8. I think you're going to see probably some sharp money on the dog by Monday.
Yeah, and it's funny, you think back to the Cotton Bowl. You and I both had Miami in that spot. It was 9.5 most of the week. There were even some 10s out there early on when that game was put together after Miami beat Texas A&M. And then on game days when you saw the Miami money come in, I would anticipate some sharper books will take some sharp action on Miami. There's no real race to ultimately grab Miami right now, if that is the side you're looking at. Obviously, we had Wes Reynolds on yesterday, and he thinks the number is right. He's a little bit of a homer, in this particular game. By the way, speaking of homers, we will have the Bear, Chris Felica, Miami's own, the Bear, coming up in just a little bit. Matt, I want to just run through this and get your thoughts on it, right? So December 6th, the game that I think was one of your favorite bets of the entire year, the Big Ten Championship, Ohio State closed as a 3.5-point favorite against Indiana. Indiana wins that game, as we all recall, 13-10. December 31st in Arlington, Texas, the Cotton Bowl. Ohio State closes 7.5 against Miami. Miami wins 24-14. So if you just do the simplistic math, the difference is 4 points. Now, Indiana's played exceptionally well, and Miami's played well too. But Matt, when you think about a common opponent played within the last 5-6 weeks in Ohio State, both these teams beat Ohio State. I'm in agreement. I don't think this number should be as high as it is when you just kind of do the simple arithmetic of a common opponent and what the point spread was over the past month.
I mean, that's true. When you think about the Big Ten championship game, it was a 13-10 game. It was ugly. Hoosiers had to grind that one out. They made a few mistakes in that game. And Hoosiers did not make mistakes against Alabama and Oregon. The opponent made all the mistakes in that game. I think the troubling part, when you look at backing the Hurricanes here, is that Indiana's so well coached, so disciplined, and so well coached. And it reminds me of Kurt Cignetti reminds me of Bob Knight. And then they always said, you know, stupid loses more than smart wins. I think in basically, if you allow the opponent to beat himself, it's probably going to beat himself more often than not. And that's Miami almost did that against Ole Miss. Tim, we were on the air that night making a long list of Miami's mistakes in that game against Ole Miss, and you're not going to be able to do that against Kurt Cignetti and win the game. So Miami's going to have to play a much cleaner game. I think the Hurricanes played a really a clean game for the most part against Ohio State, right? So it's going to take that type of performance for the Hurricanes to pull this off on Monday night. They can't be sloppy like they were against Ole Miss and think that's going to be good enough to beat Indiana. But yeah, when you compare the two opponents and how Miami played against Ohio State, as opposed to how Indiana struggled a little bit more, you would say this number is probably a little bit too high at 8.5. But also, another thing that's going to bother you about this, when you look at the coaches, you see just a coaching mismatch. When you got Kurt Cignetti on one side, Mario Cristobal on the other, it's like Garry Kasparov playing chess against Barney Fife. You know, so that's got to be troubling, too, if you're betting on the Hurricanes.
How many people just got that that comparison?
I don't know. I think decent amount.
Well, let us know. Let us know. You know, let me ask you this before we kind of dive into the X's and O's of this game. What do you give Miami, if anything, for this game being played at Hard Rock Stadium? Look, there are going to be lots of Indiana fans there. I think they'll outnumber Miami fans, but there is something to be said about the familiarity of playing in that stadium, you know, having the same pregame meal that they had, you know, all throughout the year. I don't know if it's worth 1 point, if it's worth a half point, maybe it's worth nothing. Maybe I'm crazy. Do you put any stock in that Miami plays their home games here? They'll be the road team. There'll be a lot of Indiana fans there. I'm not saying this is going to be overwhelming Miami fans. I think Indiana will probably outnumber them. But I'm curious if you give Miami any sort of bump because this game is played at Hard Rock Stadium.
I don't think there's any way you can quantify it and say it's worth a point or a point and a half. There's no way to know what that's worth. I just think it is worth something when you're handicapping it, because the atmosphere is going to be off the hook.
Yeah,
Monday night in Miami for this game, and the home dog's going to be getting a lot of support. I don't care if it's – I mean, I think one of the dumbest things you hear people say is Indiana's got about 60% of the fans or 65% of the fans. Seriously, that – I mean, if you're handicapping a game based on Indiana maybe having 70% of the fans, whatever, you're looking at the wrong things here. That really doesn't matter. Miami's going to be getting plenty of support, and I just also think the – familiarity of playing on your home field in your home stadium, right? And being at home for this game is worth something too. But Tim, I can't tell you if it's worth a point, point and a half, 2 points. Who knows? It's worth something.
Couple things to pass across regarding these two teams against the spread and how they've played in their roles that they'll be heading into on Monday night. Indiana as a favorite under Kirk Cignetti, 24-0 straight up. As a favorite, 17-7 against the spread and covering by 15.1 points per game. So that is the best cover margin over the last 2 years of college football. What I found interesting, Matt, is that Mario Cristobal in the dog role actually has been pretty good. If you throw out year one, because it was a complete rebuild, they are 6-2 ATS against the spread as an underdog since 2023. So the last three seasons, they were not an underdog once a year ago. This year, they've been an underdog three times. They won all three of those games. They won the season opener against Notre Dame. They won at Texas A&M, and they beat Ohio State. Indiana, an underdog twice this year, at Oregon and versus Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship, won both of those games too. So Kirk Cignetti doesn't lose in the underdog role. I believe there's only five teams in college football that have gone undefeated straight up as an underdog, or excuse me, as a favorite, I beg your pardon, in the last 2 years, and Indiana by far has played the most games. So you pointed it out. Cignetti, his staff, they're so buttoned up. They're so detail-oriented. They don't make mistakes. They're plus 21 in the turnover margin this year, Matt. That is absurd. 28 takeaways, just 7 giveaways this year for the Hoosiers.
Well, we talk a lot about how lucky the Chicago Bears have been, and they have been. But at the same time, the Bears lead the NFL. The defense leads the NFL in takeaways, and the Bears lead the NFL in turnover margin. And you're going to win a lot of games when you're plus big numbers in those categories, and that's what Indiana's done this year. And it's just a reflection of Kurt Cignetti and that disciplined coaching staff. And that's why I said Miami cannot play a mistake-riddled game like it did against Ole Miss and survive on Monday night. I got a feeling the Hurricanes are going to show up and play well, though.
Yeah, I do too. So let's kind of dive into it before we get to our bets. This will be a shorter podcast here since we only have one game to break down. The matchup that intrigues me the most, Matt, is watching Bryant Haynes, the defensive coordinator of Indiana, and this veteran defense and some of the studs that they have there, whether it be Aiden Fisher or Pons, the corner, just so many talented dudes. They just, it feels like they never miss any tackles, Matt. It just, anytime there's a play in space, they're making the play. But then you look at the offensive line for Miami, and they are loaded, right? This is what they want to do. They want to grind you down. This is what they did against Ole Miss. This is what they did against Ohio State. 41 minutes time of possession against Ole Miss. Won the time of possession battle against Ohio State, 33 minutes. I am so curious to see how it plays out. Carson Beck, to your point, how does he play? I had the over his rushing prop. We were sweating that out on air, and he made a couple of, he got sacked a couple of times. There was the backwards throw that was ruled a fumble that was negative yardage, but he did use his legs, and we saw it on the game-winning touchdown. So does Carson Beck use his legs on Monday night as well? I think watching that Miami offense, the way they want to play, one of the slower offenses in the country against the Indiana defense, Matt, I'm so curious to see how that one plays out on Monday night.
Yeah, I am too. And actually, I think the key to the game for me is going to be the Miami offensive line, and bigger, stronger than the Indiana defensive line. And if you can impose your will with that offensive line and kind of control the line of scrimmage and run the ball and move the chains and not put Carson Beck in a lot of third and long situations where he's got to make a bunch of risky throws. I mean, that's an idealistic view of it if you're the Miami OC, but if you can control the line of scrimmage and you're going to run for 5, 6, 7 yards a carry, or let's say 5 yards a carry, you'll be able to do a lot of damage here and give yourself a shot to win this game. The thing that bothered me was that, you know, you and I were talking about the poor play calling in the Miami Ole Miss game. You're ripping off runs of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 yards, and then you get down into the red zone, you call a flea flicker. What's the point of that, right? Yeah. There were a couple really poor play calls, and you can't make those type of mistakes here. But I think the Miami offensive line, we're going to see in the first quarter or first half if that advantage and size and power on the offensive front is going to keep Miami in the game, because if they can run the ball effectively, they're going to be there for four quarters with a shot to win the game. And also that Miami defensive line and the pressure you've got to put on Fernando Mendoza to try to make him make mistakes. Tim, he had no pressure in his face against Oregon, really. He was able to just sit back there and do whatever he wanted. Alabama did get a little pressure on Mendoza early in that game in Pasadena. But that's what this matchup's going to be Indiana's toughest, and that's not going out on a limb, but it's going to be the toughest because of Miami's offensive and defensive lines being a strength.
Now, look, the game got away from Oregon, there's no doubt, but that second drive after the pick six, they went right down the field 75 yards. They were able to get some push on that offensive line against that defensive line. So Mark Fletcher and Shamar Brown combined for 36 carries against Ole Miss. And the crazy stat, and I know the Bear, I'm sure we'll talk about it when we connect with him in just a moment, but you look back to that game against Ole Miss, they had the ball for over 40 minutes, 400 plus yards of offense, 10 plus third down conversions, multiple fourth down conversions, and four drives of 13 plays or more. And the question, Matt, especially is if you're hoping that you can get the cover here with Miami, is can they convert? On the flip side, this Indiana offense and how Mendoza has been playing, Matt, I mean, he's going to be without a doubt the number one pick now. The number moved to about minus 8,000 after Dante Moore announced he was coming back to Oregon. And I still think that would have been Mendoza going to the Raiders regardless. But Mendoza, it's not like his numbers have been, you know, Joe Burrow-esque in the regard of 400 plus yards, five touchdowns a game, whatever it may be. Right. But the precision that he plays with, he doesn't make mistakes. He's so slippery when you try to get to him. So you see Mesidor, you see Bain. How are those guys going to attack a guy like Mendoza? But the number that just pops and has been mentioned a million times, eight touchdown passes, five incompletions, Matt, so far in the postseason.
Yeah, well, I think we knew that Alabama and Oregon did not have elite defenses. I still can't figure out how Oregon shut out Texas Tech in that game. I mean, that's just a really poor performance by Texas Tech.
Right? Darren Morton?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, this. I don't really have an opinion on the total here. I think you do. I'm not sure. I would think this is going to be a more conservative, maybe a lower scoring type of game. One thing I love about this matchup is we have Wes Reynolds, an IU graduate, and Chris Tabarfalika, a Miami graduate, and they're both homers in this game. Wes thinks Indiana's going to win it going away in the second half, and the Bear thinks Miami's going to pull the outright upset. That's great.
I love it. No, I love it too. So before we get to the Bear, let's give a couple thoughts. Let's actually do this. Let's get to our best bet recap.
Best bets recap.
All right, Matt, before I give you my thoughts on the total, I think you've hinted at it. You do have a future in pocket, so you're heading into this game in pretty good shape. Indiana 10-1, you gave it out on the podcast, I think, as you mentioned, sometime in October. But what are you doing here in this game on Monday night?
Yeah, Tim, I also bet Notre Dame 16-1 at the same time.
That might cash, Matt. We might get there.
You know, what's ironic about that is, you know, probably when you look at it now, the best three teams in college football, at least right now, would be Indiana, Miami, and Notre Dame. And the Irish don't make the playoffs and didn't even get a shot to get there. It was unfortunate. So, yeah, I've got Indiana 10-1. I did bet some Indiana minus 300 when this number opened because I thought it was going to go up. But I was also planning to play Miami. And I'm going to bet Miami plus 8.5 or 9. For this Best Bets podcast, I'm going to call it 8.5 because there's one book in Vegas that has 9, but not everyone can get that. So let's say Hurricanes plus 8.5, and then I've got the Miami futures and Indiana futures on the other side. I'd love to see this fall in the middle. It's not going to stun me if the Hurricanes win the game on Monday night. I'm not going to be stunned if Indiana wins it, you know, by 10, but I think we are going to have a competitive game. And really looking forward to this because I want to see the Hurricanes make the Hoosiers sweat. And I think that's what we're going to see in the fourth quarter. I know you and I are going to be on the air Monday night for VSiN Primetime. I'll have a column up at VSiN.com on Monday morning with analysis of the game and hopefully some prop plays, some stuff that might look good on the prop market. I'll put that up by Monday morning. And Tim, a shout out to Wyatt Tomchek and our production crew for a great football season here.
Yeah, Wyatt, Ryan Hunter, Rick stepping in later on in the season. They've been absolutely incredible. Our numbers, and we'll have a recap podcast. Me and Adam Burke will do it after the game. We'll kind of dive into it. But the numbers have been amazing. You guys have been loyal listeners all year long. And thankfully, Matt, your record's been better than mine. We had some good season win totals. Not an amazing season. We had some good runs. I was able to get out of just a below 500 record. But unfortunately, last week, not great. 0-3, had Oregon, had both first half unders. So not a great week last week. Postseason, 6-5, overall 52-49-4. Two plays for the national championship, Miami plus 8.5. I saw this in Brad Power's newsletter. Miami has not been beaten by more than 7 points in their last 8 losses. And their 2 losses this year, they lost to Louisville at home by 3. They lost at SMU. Hard team to get margin on, but Indiana has defied a lot of logic. So we'll see how this one plays out. I just think the number's a little inflated. And maybe it's just me, Matt, hoping that we can wrap the season up with a competitive game here in the national championship. But I also played the first half under again. So both of them failed to get home in the semifinals. But you look back to the Oregon-Indiana game, 35-7, but Indiana had 175 yards of offense in the first half. They got helped out by mistakes from Oregon. If Miami can play a little bit cleaner, certainly I think that is beneficial, this being a lower scoring first half. When Wes and I were on the podcast on Wednesday, there were 24s out there. Those have all been scooped up. So for grading purposes, this will be 23.5. I did bet a little 24 minus 20, but for the show purpose, best bet purpose, it'll be under 23.5. So two plays, for me, Miami plus 8.5, first half under 23.5. Matt, as you mentioned, you and I will be on the air, VSiN Primetime. We'll be looking at it from a live betting angle. Last year, you had a Notre Dame future. You gave it out on the podcast. Notre Dame had that, 10-minute drive. They go up 7-0, and I think you were able to grab Ohio State at like minus 180 or something like that. So live betting sometimes can be really beneficial, especially if you are heading into this game with an Indiana future.
Yeah, I agree with that. And hopefully it's going to be a good live betting game Monday night. I think we will get one. And you know what? Last year, that Notre Dame-Ohio State game was pretty good, too. And in fact, the Buckeyes didn't cover, you remember, until that late deep pass. It looked like
Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, it looked like the Irish were going to cover that game. And the Buckeyes hit a deep throw and ended up covering. But I think we'll have a good one on Monday night. It's been a really good season. And Tim, I will see you on VSiN Primetime.
Yes, sir. That is Matt Humans. I'm Tim Murray. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Let's connect with you legend, Chris the Bear Felica. He'll join us next. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, folks, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. A little wacky for you folks on YouTube. For those of you listening on iTunes, nothing really will change here. But wanted to mention that we were able to connect with our good friend, Chris the Bear Felica, from the U, of course. And you will hear that in audio form. Unfortunately, he was en route home from recording his podcast, so we were unable to connect with him via video. So if you're watching with us on YouTube, and a salute to all of you, over 1,000 YouTube subscribers, much appreciated to all of you. You will not be able to hear the Bear, so please go to our iTunes, Spotify. You could go over to vsin.com and check it out there, but we are only audio with Chris the Bear Felica. So just a little note there. As we will hear from Chris in just a moment. But a reminder, our good friends over at Rainbow Authentics have been the proud sponsor of this podcast all year long. I'm wearing my Rainbow Authentics hat here today for those of you watching with us on YouTube. But they've also got some great gear with Kansei Matsuzawa, the Tokyo Toe. Once again, you've seen the kicks, you've felt the energy, now it's time to wear it with the official Tokyo Toe gear inspired by Lou Groza finalist and consensus All-American Kansei Matsuzawa. From bold tees to clean hoodies, every piece brings that same focus and drive. Kansei shows on the field. Show your pride, show your passion only at TokyoToe.com. That's TokyoToe.com. TokyoToe.com. Gear up and own the moment. One final little note I just wanted to pass across because we're nerds on this podcast. We had another edition. I opened with it to week zero. We now, as of right now, have five games on the week zero slate. North Carolina TCU will play in Dublin, Ireland on August 29th. NC State, Virginia, that'll be playing in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. We've got New Mexico State, Florida State, Memphis at UNLV, and of course, the Bows are going to be playing in week zero, but not out on the island. They'll be playing on the mainland against Stanford. So we are not ready yet, though. We are not ready yet for those preseason preview shows. We still got one game left, and we got some insight coming from Chris the Bear Felica. Audio only for those of you with us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Do give us a five-star review if you don't mind. All right, thanks again. Enjoy the game, everyone, and we will be back after the national championship with a recap show. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Chris the Bear Felica up next.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we keep it rolling. Audio only here as he is on his way back from recording his podcast, a little Crossing the Aisles podcasting. I'm a fan of all podcasts, and I'm a fan of his as well. You make sure you check it out, Bear Bets, wherever you get your podcasts. It's him, Jeff Schwartz, our good buddy Sammy P as well. Chris the Bear Felica. I had Wes on yesterday, and it's great to get the perspective of both sides. And Humans just made this point, Chris, which is I love the fact that we're heading into this game, and both you and Wes, IU and Miami alums respectively, are all in on your teams. Like, I tend to play the pessimistic card with the Irish. I love that you guys are all in on your squads here heading into this one.
Yeah, well, there's really no reason for Wes or I to feel any differently than being all in with how they have performed, certainly with Indiana all season long, and with a couple of dominant college football playoff wins, and certainly with Miami, with how they have played in the playoff, their best football of the year, defeated, 2-3, 6-10, I think if you're looking at like SP plus power rating. So they have played their best this year at 4-0 against top 10 teams, and three of them of those wins coming as an underdog. So yeah, there's no reason to start doubting Miami now.
You know, it's funny because I think so many people hear maybe your perspective on this game, or maybe they'll listen to what Matt and I just discussed a moment ago. Oh, you guys are just haters. You don't believe in Indiana. It's like, we can believe in Indiana and believe that they are the best team in college football from a power rating standpoint right now and think this number's a bit out of whack. And I think that's what I look at, Bear, and I know you do this a lot too. On December 6th, Indiana was a 3.5-point dog to Ohio State. On December 31st, Miami was a 7.5-point dog to Ohio State. Both those teams beat Ohio State. And now you're telling me the number's 8.5 on Miami's home field. Granted, there'll be plenty of Indiana fans there. It just feels like the math isn't mathing as we head into this game.
No, and I think what it has to do with that is you look at the way Indiana has played in the college football playoff with two dominant wins over Alabama, who, look, if you are looking to justify this, and I'm going through the exercise here of why I think this number is so big. You know, Alabama was a team we talked about earlier in the year, like even on selection day. Like, I think most of us thought that Alabama should be the odd team out if we were strictly like choosing the best teams and not having political ramifications with making sure that the SEC runner-up was not in the college football playoff, because Alabama had been run on all year. Alabama had not had a running game all year. Alabama had gotten blown out by a terrible Florida State team early in the year. So I think we all thought that Alabama should have been like the odd team out, but they weren't. And Indiana dispatched them with relative ease, and it was a dominant performance. And then you play Oregon, a team that had some injuries, certainly in the offensive backfield, team that had a couple of coordinators who were out of town for a lot of the preparation. And from what you hear now, it kind of caused some disruption. So there were a lot of reasons for Oregon to not necessarily play their best game that day. So you've got two massive wins that everybody saw on the biggest stage. So that helped create this Indiana best team ever. They're unstoppable, all of that. Couple that with the game for Miami finally, where first two college football playoff games, they didn't commit any penalties, four penalties in those two games, didn't really turn the ball over much. And then you had the game against Ole Miss where you committed 10 penalties. You had a tipped ball in the red zone that cost you points. You missed a field goal. You dropped four picks. You didn't necessarily play as crisp and as clean as you did the first couple rounds. So you've got this perception now of that's really who Miami is and Indiana is unstoppable. So that has really, I think, created that accordion with the number and how it's kind of stretched. You want to go back even further. You go back to the start of the year and we're looking at like an even bigger bar. Like we're looking at Miami being like the 5.5-6 point favorite. Like there's some people who said Indiana's been adjusted like 14 points in terms of their power rating. So it is pretty impressive. But I'm with you. I think we're getting a little bit carried away here, and we're forgetting how good Miami has played against Notre Dame, against Ohio State, at A&M, certainly on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you look at how Miami, what they want to do. And I think the question I have for you, Bear, regarding Miami, and you pointed it out heading into the Ole Miss game, was how clean this Miami team had played, right? Four total penalties against A&M, none against Ohio State, just played smart, didn't turn the ball over, didn't do too many things aggressive. And then they kind of reverted back to that against Ole Miss, which was a bit worrisome, right? 10 penalties in that game, the critical penalty or critical turnover by Beck inside scoring position. How would you quantify the Ole Miss game? Was it a game that maybe Miami was fortunate to win in the regard of, like, they lost the Louisville game because of the turnovers. They lost to SMU because of some turnovers. They made the mistakes against Ole Miss, but still found a way to win. Did they get that out of their system, if that makes sense?
I think they did. I think they totally did. And that's something that we were kicking around. We saw it early on. Like, we saw the missed opportunities and the points that were left on the board and the fact that Miami should have been up bigger in this game. And we were all saying, oh God, this is the SMU game all over again. And then finally Ole Miss does take the lead in the fourth quarter. And we're like, hey, here we go again. This one's going to sting because it's a game that Miami should have won, but ultimately they kind of gave it away. And for Miami to win that game, and this is something that Nick Saban has always talked about too, and have, like, when you win and you don't play your best and you've got opportunities for those teaching experience, coaching lessons, basically, if you do that again against a team like Indiana, you're not going to be as fortunate. So I think the fact that Miami played about as poorly as they could in terms of the fundamentals and penalties and sloppiness and bad luck, the fact that maybe that did get out of their system, I think that is a good thing, because you are not going to beat Indiana if you commit 8 penalties and a couple of them stupid personal fouls and targetings and tip passes, and you don't take an opportunity to pick some balls off, because, look, Fernando knows it's not going to give you opportunity time and time again to pick balls off. So if he does throw a stray one, you better be there and take opportunity with that. So I do feel good in a sense that I don't expect Miami to play like that again. I do think they will be cleaner I don't think we're going to see a bunch of the ridiculous stuff that we saw last week in that game against Ole Miss, just because I don't think the game is going to be as frenetic either with Ole Miss, that hurry up offense and more plays, more opportunity to do stupid stuff.
How do you see this total, Bear? I know you're on Miami here. Number has come down a little bit, 47 at Circa, 47.5 market wide. Total, first half total, 23.5. I played a little 24 minus 20 out here in town on Tuesday night. How do you see this game playing out early and then through the entirety of it? Is there a side for you that you're looking at for a total?
On the first half under is something that I'm looking at. I could see it maybe getting a look. I think the game's going to be close. So I could see maybe over for the game, but I certainly think first half under, if you can buy it up to 24, and that certainly gives you a lot more options for possibilities. Just because with Xavier Lucas out for Miami in the first half, I think you're going to see Miami maybe be a little bit more, maybe not conservative, but I think you're going to see them run a lot more clock. It would be a little bit slower tempoed on offense. That doesn't mean they're just going to run, but I think you're going to use a lot more of the play clock, just because while I hear good things about Jacoby Thomas and O.J. Frederick and Messidor and Moten, like all the injuries that they had on the side of the ball, I think they're going to be okay there. You still don't want to have to deal with Indiana down, arguably your best cornerback at that point in the game. So I think Miami, in the first half, you're going to see them really bleed clock to try and limit the number of possessions IU has. So yeah, 20 under 24 added juice, I'm certainly not opposed to that one bit.
Yeah. Yeah, look around, see if you can get that. Maybe as we get closer to game day as well, that could potentially reemerge there. You know, something I noticed, Bear, and you could speak to this under Mario Cristobal, year one, kind of throw it out. It was a rebuild process. They didn't make a bowl game. Since then, they're 6-2 against the spread as an underdog. And I mentioned this talking to Matt in the opening segment. They really don't get blown out. Their last eight losses have all been by a touchdown or less. So what's the route to Miami losing this game and failing to cover, in your opinion?
It is the secondary not being able to deal with those three Indiana wide receivers. The emergence of Becker has really given them an added dimension, and not only having to deal with Surratt and Cooper, now you got to deal with Becker and Fernando Mendoza's ability to hit those back shoulder throws. And it's something that as a defensive back, you really have a hard time covering. So if Indiana can protect long enough to give Mendoza an opportunity to hit those wide receivers, that could create some big plays. But that's the one thing. That's what scares me the most in this game, is Indiana's ability to move the ball through the air. I think they're going to do a pretty good job defensively on the ground. They did against Ole Miss for the most part, with the exception of two things, the one long run by Gwan Lacy, and then scrambling from Trinidad Chambliss. So I think they're going to do a good job on Black and Hemby, but it's those throws that worry me. And then on the flip side, Indiana, they seem to just be so well-versed, schooled, certainly the back seven, the linebackers and the defensive backs. If this turns into a situation where Miami can't run, for whatever reason, it would be the first time this year they really haven't been able to run. I think they've gone for over 150 in each of their three playoff games, and having to rely on Carson Beck having to push the ball downfield with some deeper throws, something that he did in the second half against Ole Miss, but something that he really didn't do much of in the second half of the year. That would, again, I think, play right into Indiana's hands. So just how the passing game progresses for both teams would be my biggest concern. How I could see this ultimately turning out with a continuing that trend of six straight years here now in championship games where you've had the favorite win in blowout fashion.
You know, Bear, before I let you run, you're a historian of this sport. You know this sport as well as anyone. You've covered this sport forever, whether it was at ESPN or now at Fox. How did you, what can we compare this Indiana team to? You know, because we saw this rise a year ago, and then I don't want to say it was expected, but, you know, they met their maker with Notre Dame. But now this is a team that was 100-1 preseason. I'm scrolling through previous champs. You know, looks like Auburn in 2010 was like 50-1. LSU, I think, with Burrow was like maybe 30 or 40-1 preseason. I can't recall, Bear, anyone being 100-1 or further in the preseason to win the title.
Yeah, the Auburn team is the first one that came to mind in terms of like a just an I don't want to say unhavable, but just a complete off the grid title. Obviously, they had Cam Newton, and I'm not sure people knew, obviously, going into the year, the type of player Cam Newton was going to be. And they only had another NFL player on the other side of the ball, Nick Fairley. So that was a team kind of like Indiana that wasn't really littered with day one, day two type NFL draft picks. And then ultimately, they won a bunch of games, and Cam carried them on his back. I guess if you go back, I'd love to know if we can find what Georgia Tech would have been in 1990, that they'd be, they split the national title. That seems like a team that would have been monster price with how good in that era, both Miami and Notre Dame, Washington, and then the team they ultimately split the national title with in 1990, Colorado. But like it's historically, and I think that's part of the reason why people are kind of like raising an eyebrow and taking a little side eye. All right, what's going on here? When people can't fully justify and explain and rationalize something, that's when their mind starts going to conspiracy theory places and to cheating and rumors and all of that, because it's a team without any five stars. It's a team, an older team in the portal. They were the losingest team in college football history when Cignetti took over. So like nobody A, saw this coming, and B, now that it's happening, they're like, okay, but how is this happening? When you look at them on the hoof compared to Alabama or Ohio State, it's like, this just doesn't add up. And I think that when that happens, that's why I think people are like, okay, what the hell's going on here? But they don't make mistakes. We talked about it ad nauseum. Like, they're one of the best third down offenses in the country. They're one of the best third down defense in the country. Don't turn the ball over. They don't commit stupid penalties. All of those like things that the coaches check off, like with, just to do this, and they do them all. They don't miss tackles. Like that was one of the things I think a lot of people who were on the other side of the ball with Indiana, I think they're so impressed with how well they are in position and tackle and don't seem to miss tackles. So, like, are they going to be hard to beat? Yeah, absolutely. But I do think Miami, if they go out and play the way they did, certainly getting Notre Dame earlier in the year against Ohio State on the road at A&M, I think they have a very good chance to pull the upset.
All right, Bear, before we let you run, you got a prediction. How's this game playing out on Monday night?
Yeah, let me go. I'll go Miami 31-24. How about that? So I guess it's dog outright and under, right? Dog outright and over. Played Malachi Toney. Receptions over. So those were two things that stuck out that I want to play in.
Bear, much appreciated, and enjoy it on Monday night.
We certainly will. Thanks, Jim.
There he is. The Bear, Chris Felica. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.